Title speaks for itself. I'm going to be talking about quantum mechanics. So what do we know about quantum mechanics? Well, it's generally accepted that quantum mechanics is the correct theory to describe atomic and subatomic phenomena. How it extends beyond that is still a matter of debate. So what do we know given the theory? So the evolution of quantum states is purely deterministic. If you specify the state at a given time, Schrodinger evolution determines how the state will evolve in time. That is until a measurement is made, and this introduces an indeterminism into the theory, which is a cause for much of the unsettlement about interpretation. So quantum mechanics only determines the correct probabilities for measurement outcomes on physical systems. Thus, quantum mechanics is fundamentally a probabilistic theory. So the question I'm concerned with here is, what is meant by the term probability? Is it an objective property of an actual physical system, or rather merely an expression of our subjective state of knowledge of the physical system? So to address this question, I'm going to go through the formalism a little bit. Since I'm making a technical point, I need to review the formalism. I'll try to make it understandable to people who don't have a math background. We'll see how well that goes. I'm going to say a few things about probability theory and the two of the main interpretations of it. Then I'll talk about interpretations of quantum probability, which really turn on the interpretation of the formalism itself, or the interpretation of the state vector, so which is supposed to represent, well, which does represent a quantum state. So considering the state vector represent the state of an actual physical system, I'll argue leads to relative frequency interpretation of probabilities. And considering the state vector to represent the state of knowledge of a system leads to degree of belief interpretations. Then I'll ask the question, well, what are the implications of this in terms of what the actual formalism accommodates? Well, it seems as though the standard quantum mechanical formalism does accommodate a relative frequency interpretation, but the degree of belief interpretations require a generalized theory of measurement. So we'll get to that hopefully eventually. So before I do that, I'm just going to remind everybody of some basic vector algebra to get you guys prepped into thinking about quantum mechanics. So what we have here are three orthonormal unit vectors pointing in independent directions in actual space. What I mean by orthonormal is that they're mutually orthogonal, which means if you project one or perpendicularly onto the other, imagine a light shining perpendicularly, then it shines down to zero. There's no shadow. The projection is zero. And they're normalized to one. They have length one. Now, it turns out that any general vector can be expressed in terms of this orthonormal basis. And the coefficients, c1, c2, c3, multiplying by the unit vectors, are actually given to you by the projection, orthogonal projection, onto the unit vectors. And this projection is actually, within the formalism of vector algebra, is determined by the dot product, which is like the projection of the vector v onto the unit vector x, similarly for the other directions. So this is an actual representation. What comes next is the actual structure of quantum mechanics, which is different from this in a particularly important way, because quantum states are represented by vectors, not in a real vector space, but a complex vector space called a Hilbert space. And this Hilbert space represents the possible states of the system. The vector representing the state, which I'm calling alpha, is called the state vector. So for people, in the case of continuous variables like position and momentum, the state vectors, this actual thing is associated to it, but the wave function. So think of it like the wave function. But the state vector is a much more general specification. So the Hilbert space has an associated inner product, which maps pairs of vectors to complex numbers. So this is like projecting one vector onto another, and the number obtained, the complex number, is some generalized kind of length of the projected vector. Physical observables are represented by Hermitian operators that act on the space. Doesn't really matter what that means, just the important properties of them is that they determine a complete set of orthonormal basis vectors, very similar to the vector algebra case. So all of the vectors in the space can be expressed in terms of this basis set, and they're orthonormal. And they have associated real values for physical observables. That's a part of them being Hermitian. So these eigenvectors are the possible observable states corresponding to the given observable. So an observable is an operator. It determines a set of basis eigenvectors. Those eigenvectors are the possible states subsequent to a measurement corresponding to that observable operator, OK? So this enables the state vector to be stated in terms of the basis of eigenvectors, as I just said. All right, so that's how it looks. Alpha is expressed as a sum of the basis vectors with coefficients. And the coefficients are now complex numbers. So this was like x, y, and z before, and the numbers were real numbers. And you see the inner product coming in there. That's the projection of alpha onto the basis vectors ai. All right, so the expansion, as I said, makes the constant times the basis vector the projection of alpha along the basis vector, which is, as you saw, with the I should be pointing up here, with the inner product appearing there as the projection. Now you can rearrange this in this way, and what you have now is a sum of operators acting on the state vector, and it generates, so the operators actually project onto the individual basis vectors. So this leads to the definition of the projection operator, projecting onto a basis vector. So it projects a state onto the given basis vector. These projection operators are in one-to-one correspondence with so-called pure states. And so we can use projection operators to actually represent quantum states. So it's an alternative way of representing a state. And in the case, projection onto the state vector is represented by this operator here called rho, which is the density operator representation of pure states. So we'll be concerned with both alpha and rho as representation of quantum states. So now we have a schematic picture. I'm trying to appeal to your intuitions here. Schematic picture of how this works for a Hilbert space rather than a real vector space. So again, we have our orthonormal basis set, A1, A2, A3, except now these are observable relative. So the observable determines this orthonormal basis, but the state vector can still be expressed in terms of them. And once again, the inner product is the projection of the state vector onto each of the orthonormal basis vectors. So this is a three-dimensional space, so there's three elements in the basis set. And a physical example of this would be a massive spin one particle. So I don't think I can think of any examples of such things off the top of my head. I should have thought about that. Anyway, so it just means that there's three possible states in the measurement. Spin one up, spin one down, and zero. But this formalism generalizes to any dimension. So you can, in fact, have continuously many of these basis vectors, which you have in the case of position and momentum measurements. So it's a very general mathematical formalism. I apologize for having to try and explain it to you. So what about measurements? Well, a state vector is in general in a superposition of measurable states of an observable, okay? Which was why you have that sum with complex numbers times e to the basis. That's actually a superposition of them. It's not in any given measurable state, it's actually in a superposition of measurable states. So when a measurement is made of it on a system, the system is always found to be in one of those basis eigenvectors. It's found to be in one state, not in a superposition. So you actually have this state vector reduction process, also called the collapse of the wave function or wave vector, where you have a superposition that somehow jumps into this one state. And that's where the indeterminism comes in to the theory. So the modulus squared, which is like the absolute value squared of the coefficients, is actually the probability. So thinking back to these constants being projections onto basis vectors having a certain length, well, the probabilities are actually lengths. They're lengths of the projection of the state vector onto the basis vectors. So, and that's the fancy looking equation. For the probability, given that the system is in state alpha, that you will find the system or measure the state system to be in the state AI, if you're measuring the observable A. Okay. Now the expectation value, I just need to say these things quickly for completeness. The expectation value we can think of as the statistical average of observables over a large number of particles. And in terms of the density operator, it has a form of the trace of the density operator times the observable. If you don't know what that means, don't worry about it. All right, so finally, just to finish this off. So you have the state vector, and you have the components on each of the basis vector, the projection. Those determine the probabilities. So the modulus squared of each of these is equal to 1, which is actually a kind of analog of the Pythagorean theorem. Now, that it's a deterministic evolution, Schrodinger evolution. This vector can move around in any direction in the Hilbert space. So the basis vectors remain fixed, but the constants vary continuously. However, when you make a measurement, there's a jump into a single state, and that is no longer deterministic. It can't be predicted which state the system will be observed to be in. All right, so that's quantum mechanics. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about probability theory, how it's set up. So Kolmogorov's system is a sort of standard axiomatic theory of probability, which is based on measure theory, and it enables probability to be defined on finite and infinite sample spaces. So how does that, this is how the theory is structured. I'm not going to talk about this in any detail. I just want it to be here so that I can refer to particular things. So the set omega is the sample space. That's the things you actually get in an experiment. In this case, it's the measured states of a quantum system. So it's the set of basis eigenvectors. Then you have subsets which correspond to experiments. Don't worry about that. Then you have the real valued set function P, which is the probability function. So probability functions take values in 0, 1, the interval 0, 1. And the probability of the whole set is 1, which just means you're going to get one of these basis vectors whenever you do an experiment. Now, if you want to consider conditional probabilities, which you do for certain reasons, you need to add an additional axiom. So this axiom called Bayes' rule tells you the probability of B given that A is the case. And that's just defined to be the probability that A and B obtain divided by the probability that A obtains. Okay, so those are the axioms. What about the case? How does this pan out in quantum mechanics? Well, as I said, the sample space is observable relative. So the observable determines a basis of eigenvectors. Those eigenvectors are the measurable states of the system. And those are the basic fundamental things you can observe in an experiment. That determines the sample space. Okay. Now, the probability measure assigns probabilities to eigenvectors and to subsets of omega such that it satisfies that last axiom. And that's just the proof that it does. Okay. What about the two main interpretations I was going to talk about? Well, relative frequency interpretation is probability interpreted as the relative frequency of measurement outcomes. So how often particular measurement outcomes occur. So consider an infinite sequence of measurements on quantum systems in the same state. So this could be a large ensemble of particles in the same state, or it could be a beam of particles all prepared in the same state. And if you were to measure the value of some observable in an experiment, the relative frequency of measurements is going to be how many times you see a particular observable. So, and the idea of statistical stabilization comes in because this is defined to be, it's expected that it stabilizes to a finite value as you take the limit of an infinitely large ensemble. So NAI here is the number of times that you see AI, some particular AI, divided by the number of trials, and then you take the limit as N goes to infinity, and that's the relative frequency. So on this interpretation of the probability just is the relative frequency and nothing else. A propensity interpretation would, on top of this, seek some sort of property of the physical system that's responsible for the observed frequency. But in the case of quantum mechanics, we don't really have access to any other properties of the system that can tell us about what these are, at least in terms of taking quantum mechanics as is. Okay, and then, so that was an objective interpretation of probability, which takes probability to be something objective in the physical world, so a property of the physical world. Here, we consider probability as a rational degree of belief that in the occurrence of a particular event, given a body of background knowledge, and it's denoted as a conditional probability. Probability that event E will obtain given the knowledge H, given the fact that H. So this is a prescriptive interpretation, and so is considered an epistemic interpretation rather than subjective interpretation, which would be more a descriptive, since people's assignments of probabilities are never correspond with the rational assignment. So epistemic is the term for this kind of probability. Characteristic of this interpretation is a change in the background information, which naturally changes your probability assignments. So you perform an experiment, it tells you something about the properties of the system, and you update your probabilities for expectations of future experiments. So to see how this works formally, if you consider a partition of the sample space, this just means, imagine we have three vectors in the sample space. It's just a way of dividing it into two disjoint parts. So it could be the three individuals, or the first two, and then the last, something like that. So if you could perform an experiment, one of the things in the partition will obtain. So the theory tells you you can expand things in this way. And subsequent to experiment, one of the possibilities obtains, resulting in the probability. So you have P, E, H, I is the possible posterior probabilities, where P E is your prior probability, prior to the experiment. And so the updating of probabilities, which is called Bayesian conditionalization, goes in this way. So you start with probability assignments for the event E, and it's the possible ways that could change based on what you observe in your experiment, that's the HI. And then after you observe HK, say, you update your probabilities to PE given HK. Okay. So what about probability in quantum mechanics? Well, probabilities come into quantum mechanics from the features of measurement of quantum states, and so are naturally intimately connected with the measurement problem. So how you interpret the probabilities has a lot to do with how you propose to solve the measurement problem. How do you account for what's going on in the measurement procedure? But many of the interpretations of quantum mechanics were just to solve that exact problem. So really, the way that probability is interpreted is intimately connected with how quantum mechanics itself is interpreted. So how quantum mechanics is interpreted really turns on the interpretation of the state vector, as I mentioned before. So let's look at some interpretations. So we can do this in the form of questions. Well, does the state vector represent an actual physical system? Suppose that we think it does. Well, then we have to give a physical interpretation of the quantum mechanical formalism, which is going to lead to an objective interpretation of the probability, because the probabilities are about something physical, so the probabilities have to be associated with properties or properties of an actual physical system. So such interpretations must in some sense be realist interpretations. Now, as I alluded or just mentioned, the most pressing task for such interpretations is to explain what happens in the measurement process. So there's another way of dividing this up. Does the state vector represent an individual system? Well, suppose we say yes. So this gives you a set of individual interpretations. So the state vector represents an individual quantum state, well, individual particle or a collection of particles, a hydrogen atom or a molecule or something like that. So on such an interpretation, linear superpositions of measurable states are physical. And so a mechanism or an explanation explaining away of what happens in state vector reduction must be given. So there are different ways of dealing with this. No collapse interpretations, such as the Everett relative state interpretation and its derivatives, avoid this issue in principle because there is no collapse. So they reject the measurement postulate and just say that, well, explain away the fact that it looks like there is state vector reduction by various ways, one, I guess, being decoherence. Other ways out are hidden variable interpretations, such as Bohmian mechanics, which restore determinism by always attaching a definite observable value to a particle at all times. And the probabilities come in because of our inability to specify finely enough what the actual state of the system is. So it gets the same values as quantum mechanics, but it restores a sort of classical picture. I find Bohmian mechanics difficult as a realist interpretation because of many strange properties that it has. For instance, the harmonic oscillator particle in a box is supposed to be a particle oscillating in an infinite potential well. Well, it turns out that the momentum of the particle is the gradient of the phase of the wave function, which is zero because you have standing waves. So the actual before measurement, the particle is stationary, but after measurement, it jumps into motion as if it were moving in the way that you observe it to, which is smacks a lot of the measurement postulate. Plus, it's sometimes the case that the actual position of a particle is not associated with the position variable, which is also kind of strange. So, but nevertheless, there are, Antony Valentini obviously is a notable person who's interested in Bohmian mechanics, so I hope I didn't offend him. Collapse interpretations is a final way of doing things, such as the GRW and CSL, provided dynamical reduction mechanisms. So they provide an actual mechanism for how the state vector reduction occurs. But all of these are associating the wave function with a physical system. But if we ask ourselves, now, well, what does the probability actually represent? Well, the way that we determine that quantum mechanics predicts the correct probabilities is through observing relative frequencies of measurable states in an experiment. And that's really all that we see given experiments. And so it seems reasonable that that's how we should interpret what the probability is. So a relative frequency of AI for measurements on an imaginary pure ensemble characterized by alpha. It's a bit problematic looking this way because, well, it's the classic problem of defining a probability for a single event. What does that really mean? But it seems to me that this is a way to characterize the situation here. So this seems so because actual measurements on an approximation of such an ensemble, an infinite ensemble, are necessary to determine the probabilities empirically, they said. So for the individual interpretation, the probability is a relative frequency, albeit an imaginary relative frequency. So what happens if we answer no to the question? So it doesn't represent an individual system. Well, this yields the statistical interpretation. So the probability of measuring particular properties in an individual system is undefined. So on this view, quantum mechanics actually tells us nothing about experiments on single systems. So how do we answer the question of what the probability represents? Well, here, the state vector represents an ensemble of systems in the same state. And so it's actually only talking about many, many body systems. So it quite clearly is going to be a relative frequency interpretation of the probability, but it'll be an infinite ensemble rather than an actual one, which will always be finite. So it's still an idealization. So we conclude from this that answering yes to the first question, which is does the state vector represent an actual physical system, leads to an objective relative frequency interpretation of the probability. So what happens if we answer no to this question? Well, there's a huge latitude of possibilities here, naturally. But I think that the impressive empirical accuracy of quantum mechanics leads one to consider that the state vector represents our state of knowledge of an actual physical system. It doesn't tell us what the structure of that system is, but it tells us represents our state of knowledge of some system. So any such interpretation is really instrumentalist. You don't interpret it as actually representing physical reality. It's really talking about our subjective state of knowledge. Well, so knowledge of what sort of physical system, we then ask. Well, does it represent knowledge of an individual physical system? If you say yes to this, then it leads to the following interpretations. One being the Copenhagen interpretation, which takes the state vector to represent the state of knowledge of a particular physical system, which naturally changes in a continuous way when we perform a discontinuous way, rather, when we perform a measurement. We update our knowledge of the state of the system. The other way here, which is particularly, what's the word, gaining momentum, I think, these days, is the information theoretic interpretation. Very popular in quantum computation and quantum information theory. Well, I guess it just is the interpretation in that case. It takes the state vector to represent our state of knowledge of the combination of a physical system and the ancillary measurement device. So what does the probability represent? Well, it represents our rational degree of belief, given that the updating of our knowledge is suggestive of Bayesian conditionalization. So the reduction of the state vector looks a lot like Bayesian conditionalization. So does quantum mechanics accommodate, so this leads us now to the final question. Does quantum mechanics accommodate relative frequency and degree of belief interpretations? So I'm not going to consider the statistical interpretation. I'm just going to look at the individual ones to compare them together. So as we saw, for an infinite sequence of measurements on quantum systems in the same state, the relative frequency of measurements of the system to be in that state is this limit of measurements, this limit of frequencies on an infinite ensemble. Okay. Oh. Can I take 1 minute? Okay. All right. So, well, this is nice because you only have one kind of probability, but I won't measure that, and I won't mention that. But it actually relates it to an observable, namely the projection operator. And it works in this generalized case with the density operator. Now, just quickly, so if you can read this quickly. Okay, so this I think is interesting, and I just want to mention this quickly. So the state vector reduction is similar in form to Bayesian conditionalization, as you see there, but the problem is that the coefficients aren't probabilities. So this suggests moving to the density operator, but the problem is you get these cross terms, right? Not the second equation there, which is what you require. You need the probabilities times the ending states, the states you observe. So quantum mechanics formally does not accommodate a degree of belief interpretation. The information theoretic interpretation actually does it with the generalized theory of measurement, actually does allow this, and there's a generalized probability rule to go with it. But it turns out that here you get an expansion in terms of these sort of intermediate density operators with the probabilities of the experiments multiplied by them, and you have that reduction there. But that doesn't agree with quantum mechanics at that point, so you need an additional unitary adjustment, so probability conserving adjustment, to get it to agree with quantum mechanics, which tells us really that we can see quantum Bayesian and conditionalization different from classical, which is a two-step process of updating one's beliefs. So I guess that's it. Thank you. So questions, if I can see anybody here. My apologies for presenting an overly technical paper. Yeah. Right. Well, yes, I think so. The thing is with propensity interpretation, it is intuitively sort of natural to expect for an objective probability that there will be something within the world that explains why we observe the frequencies we do, right? Which is one of the limitations of the relative frequency interpretation, naturally. But I think quantum mechanics being as it is, it doesn't seem as though it actually tells us anything about why we see the frequencies we do. It just tells us that we will observe these frequencies, which is why I'm inclined to say it's a relative frequency interpretation rather than a propensity interpretation. Although I feel the sort of pull towards a propensity interpretation. Any other questions? No? Yes. Right. Excuse me. Well, that's exactly the question. That's and it, as I say, it's dependent upon how you interpret quantum mechanics, right? So if you do interpret quantum mechanics as representing an actual physical system, then it's telling you that the probabilities are objective, right? If that's the correct interpretation. If, on the other hand, you have reasons why you don't think it's that way, really it represents your information or your knowledge of a physical system, then that takes you to a degree of belief interpretation, but which is accommodated within the information theoretic framework, but is not with maybe more sort of naive ways of thinking about how quantum mechanics could represent our knowledge. So I'm not saying what interpretation is right, I'm just saying that what interpretation you take of quantum mechanics determines how you ought to interpret the probabilities. So that's why I'm short on conclusions, because I can't tell you, and it's still a matter of intense debate what the actual the correct way of interpreting what quantum mechanics is telling us about the world. Yes. I'm not sure exactly how to answer that question, but for me, what is interesting is that is just the formal point at the end that the standard measurement formalism doesn't accommodate a degree of belief interpretation. It actually does require a more sophisticated measurement formalism. But that's just really an observation. It's not as though I discovered that for myself. Sure. Well, the other difference, yeah, there is a definite difference, as I mentioned. I see. Why you would want this extended measurement formalism? Is that why? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm not sure how to. I don't know if I can give you a shocking surprise ending to my talk. But I just for me, I thought that just that fact in itself is interesting. And I went into this just wanting to get clear on the issue. And so beyond that, how to decide maybe where this might go, and this is totally speculative, is if you can come up with reasons why because all various interpretations add extended things to the quantum mechanical formalism, like the collapse theory interpretations add, the CSL adds this non-local noise field that is responsible for spontaneous localization collapse, right? So if you can come up with a reason or evidence that actually there is something like that out there, then that leads towards that. If there's some reason why, for instance, you can't consider the state on its own, you really have to take into account the entanglement with the measurement device, which I can't come up with an argument for why, and I'm sorry about that. But then that gives, I think, lends some kind of support to that view of the probability, if you have to interpret the measurement procedure in that way, go to this more general framework. So I don't have answers at this point. So. Okay, I guess there's no more questions. Or is there a question? I just can't see. Okay, well, thank you. Thank you. I'm not sure I do either.
I there's very little to the formalism, but I think I got the basic idea.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad. I was hoping that that would be intelligible, and so I'd be able to communicate some of the stuff.
I don't know.